Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Say What Author Spotlights, a division of Say What Book Club. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. Each month we bring you the featured author of the book we're currently reading. Today's author is Yehide Kalanko, and we'll be discussing her novel, Daughters Who Walk This Path. Yehide, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes. Okay, so we'll just go ahead and jump on in. Why don't you tell us about Daughters Who Walk This Path?
Okay. Daughters Who Walk This Path is a novel set in Nigeria, which is in West Africa, where that's where I was born and raised. And it's a story of two cousins, two female cousins who both experienced child sexual abuse. And it takes us from the childhood to adulthood and talks about the different things that they experienced and how they were able to, in some ways, overcome and make like a new meaning for themselves, regardless of what had happened to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, why did you choose to write this story?
I started working on the book in 2009. At that time, I was working as a child protection worker, and I was working with children who had been sexually abused in their families, and it was a very difficult time for me, just processing all the things that I heard and I read. And when I would go home at the end of the day, I started writing. And so I wrote a poem called Silence Speaks, which is about a child disclosing, making a disclosure about sexual abuse. And after I shared that poem with my friends, that was what actually led to my writing the novel. I was surprised by the feedback I received from the poem. And so, so that poem actually became a theme in the book. And that was how the novel came about.
Okay. Now, is there an underlying theme present in your work?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Is there an underlying theme present in your writing? You know, some people write just for entertainment. You know, others write for, you know, there's a message they're trying to bring about, you know, and it could be different types of things. And then other people write, and there's kind of a general theme that kind of flows through all of their writings. Would you say that there's a theme present in your writings?
I would say the theme in my writing, because my day job is a social worker. So I definitely, the things that I write about are things that are important to me, things, issues that I care about, whether it's child sexual abuse, domestic violence, any power injustice. So it's a way, writing has always been a way, ever since I was 12, a way of processing my emotions. And so I think my first audience really is me, because I write and, you know, it's part of things that I'm dealing with. And I've been very fortunate that other people read this book and, you know, it has meaning for them as well.
Okay. Now, are you prepared to read an excerpt for us?
Yes, I am. So
I'll write ahead whenever you're ready.
Yes. So I will be reading from Daughters Who Walk This Path, chapter 11. To set the scene for us, this part talks about Auntie Morenike, who is a primary character in the book. He is one of the, I mentioned that the book is about two cousins. She is one, she's the older one. And in this scene, there's a gentleman named Mr. Tiami, who is her friend. And at this time, Mariah was visiting her cousin, older cousin. And they talk about politics. And it just, and he also wrote a poem for her. And so this is the scene I'm going to be reading from.
Okay.
I knew Mr. Tiami very well. He often came to Auntie Morenike's flat during my visits. He and Auntie Morenike would spend hours arguing about one political issue or another, their voices rising as they each tried to prove their point. I liked the way Mr. Tiami spoke to me like an adult, calling me Miss Morayo with a gentle smile. When I overheard Mr. Tiami and Auntie Morenike discussing his campaign strategies, I wondered where the small, slim man found the courage to run against Chief Amoni. Chief Amoni was like a demigod in our local government. His family members and friends held all the top government positions, and his political thugs, notorious for their brutality, were his personal law enforcement buddy. 2 years earlier, men riding on Okadas had gone down Chief Amoni's main opponent, Engineer Oluwalambe, and his pregnant wife in broad daylight. Chief Amoni's head thug, named Avenger, was seen riding one of the Okadas. The year before, a man who publicly challenged Chief Amoni at a local government meeting disappeared. He was never found. Daddy Morayo, Mommy often said with a shake of her head, Chief Amoni is a kind of tough meat reserved for season two. Who can win against him? The next time I saw Mr. Tiami was on Auntie Morenike's birthday. It was her 23rd. Auntie Morenike had invited him over to her flat for a special meal. While I stayed behind at the dining table to finish my second piece of birthday cake, Mr. Tiamiyu and Auntie Morenike moved to the sitting room. I watched him pull out a piece of paper from his pocket. He cleared his throat. Miss Balogun, he addressed her formally with great respect. I wrote this little poem yesterday. I called it The Tango. He gave a little nervous smile. I wanted to share it tonight. I'll be happy to hear it, Auntie Morenike said with a soft smile. Glancing towards me at the dining table, Mr. Tiamiyu slowly paced the small room. He had an intense look on his face as he began to read the words. Four eyes met across the room, and the ageless dance of love began. That instant recognition, the sensual softening of the gaze, the fluttering of long eyelashes. One pair looks away in sudden remembered modesty. The other pair continues to stare boldly, leaving little doubt as to the brazen intentions of the owner. As two dark eyes move closer, the other pair dims for a brief second, feeling quite faint from the anticipation. But wait, the brazen eyes move right by, leaving behind the pair clouded by bewilderment. And then, a gentle tap on the shoulder, a slow turn, and there they were, those eyes from across the room. The tango continued. I was not surprised to see Auntie Morenike look away. When it came to Mr. Tiamiyu, she seemed determined not to see the devotion shining brightly in his eyes. For the remainder of the night, Mr. Tiamiyu stared at her intently, but she would not meet his gaze. The following Saturday, Auntie Morenike and I arrived at the school football field to find that Mr. Tiamiyu had already set up a wooden podium and loudspeakers near the goalposts. But the grass on the field was sparse, and there were no benches. Auntie Morenike, where are the people going to sit? I asked. She looked up at the overcast sky and frowned. Mr. Tiamiyu could not afford to rent any chairs, she said. The main problem now is the rain. God knows we need the water in this drought, but I hope the rain will wait. When Mr. Tiamiyu saw us, he greeted us with that warm smile that complemented the wide Oyo tribal mark on his face. He shook my hand vigorously. Miss Mariah, so you were able to come, he said. That is excellent. I can see that your auntie is determined to infuse some of her love of politics into you. Is that not so, Miss Balogun, he asked. Auntie Morenike rolled her eyes in response. For two people who saw each other every day, the formal way they addressed each other was amusing to me. If I had been bold enough, I would have asked Auntie Morenike how she felt about him. We quickly joined the preparation for the rally, and Mr. Tiamiyu stood on the podium to speak. And as he spoke, he talked about the big dreams he had for his people. He walked around across the little wooden podium, and even though the crowd was small, he spoke as if he was calling out to an entire stadium of listeners. For over a quarter of a century, I've watched and listened to our people talk, shout, and cry about the injustice in our land. We shout to the high heavens about the relentless treachery of our tribe and the unending domination of one another. Yet we remain silent about individual acts of injustice. Market women, you march on the streets protesting against the injustice of corrupt transporters. Yet you sell bottles of palm oil to unwary, hungry buyers with a friendly smile. Tainted palm oil. Looking around, I see guilty face looks on the faces of some of the market women. They try to fade back into the crowd. And buyer, don't you dare shout that you've been violated. Remember, if you would, the many times you calmly ask for bribes before doing the jobs you were being paid to do. In our little corner, we must reflect the integrity we demand in our leaders. Mr. Tiamu's voice broke. My people, it is time to stop applauding and condoning those who steal our joint inheritance and toss us dry bones. If not, I fear that in another quarter of a century, we'll still be talking and crying while our youth, the strength of our land, wander the world looking for a future. Our children will look around the utter dissolution and accept, yes, accept, that this catastrophe is their only reality. They would accept that for our land, indeed, for our people, there can be no change. Thank you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. That was Yehide Polanco reading an excerpt from her novel, Daughters Who Walk This Path. So why don't you tell us where your literary journey began? Have you been writing your whole life?
I started writing poetry when I was 12. And I wrote really for me, so it wasn't something I shared with other people. It was just anytime I was feeling happy, sad, any of these basic emotions, I would write it out. I guess now that I'm a therapist, it was more of my way of just externalizing those emotions. So I wrote poetry in university. I was a member of my press organization. I just wrote articles about things going on the university campus. And finally in 2009, as I said earlier, that was the first time that I thought of actually writing a novel because I didn't think I could write one. And Daughters Who Walk This Path was my very first manuscript. And that first manuscript ended up getting me an agent and a publishing deal. And everything happened pretty quickly, within about 18 months. So it's really been an amazing journey for me up to this point.
Okay. Now, what genre would you say that this book falls into?
Some people say women's fiction. I think definitely fiction, literary fiction, women's fiction. I think this two probably fall in one of those categories.
Okay. Now you definitely have a message within your writing, and in a time where urban fiction seems to be gaining popularity, how do you bridge your work to reach readers who might not ordinarily give works in your genre a chance? Because you have something that people need to read. So, you know, how do you bridge, you know, into other arenas?
I'm hoping that when I say writing, my thing was not writing particularly for any genre. I was just writing a story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that regardless of what. Whether it's, you know, urban fiction, that you can read the book, and readers love to read about, because I personally, I'm a big reader. So when I read books, I don't necessarily read just in one genre. I read to expand my world and in whatever genre that is. And so I'm hoping that, you know, readers from that don't necessarily read what we'd call literary fiction or women fiction would take it, you know, would say, oh, well, maybe learn about another culture, another place that's different from mine. So I'm hoping that they can engage with the book from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, are there any other genres that you'd like to try writing in? I didn't hear you.
I definitely would love to write a novel in inspirational fiction, Christian fiction.
Okay.
I would love to write something and like a psychological thriller. I think I'd love to watch Criminal Minds and all those kind of shows. and so I'd love to write something in that.
Okay. All right, well, let's take just a brief intermission here. We'll hear a word from our sponsors. Just a moment, please.
Thank you.
Are you looking for the next great read? A book filled with love, passion, betrayal, and intrigue. The award-winning novel, Season of Change, by Tamika Patrice Kane, is sure to satisfy your literary sweet tooth. Check out this must-read book reviewers are calling uplifting and emotional, an exceptionally great read, deeply intense and thought-provoking. Order your copy today, available in paperback and ebook on Amazon.com or at www.tamikapatrice.com.
The Say What Book Club presents Brunch with your favorite authors. Come out and meet 9 of your favorite authors, including NAACP Image Award winner Beverly Jenkins. Enjoy a lovely afternoon of good food, fellowship, photo ops, and of course, great books. Saturday, June 6, 2015, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Marriott in Livonia, Michigan. We're more than a book club. We're a movement. Join us. Contact Say What Book Club at 734-931-0415 or email us at saywhatbc@yahoo.com for details.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Say What Author Spotlight. I am your host, Tamika Patrice Kane. Today's special guest is national bestselling author Yehide Kalanko, and we've been discussing her highly successful debut novel, Daughters Who Walk This Path. So, Yehide, why don't you tell us about your literary journey and where the writing began for you? I know you were saying it started at 12 and you were doing poetry, and just kind of give us a recap there as we kind of left off so we can let our listeners learn a little bit more about you and your journey.
Okay. So it did start from poetry. So fast forwarding to 2009, after I wrote the novel, like the first draft of the novel, my very first manuscript, I think it came out to about 40,000 words, and I'm like, wow, so what am I going to do with this? And so I shared it with some friends, and they read it, and I'm like, oh, you might have something here. And I said, okay, so I went back, I took the advice they'd given me, I went back and I revamped the manuscript, and by July 2010, I had a manuscript of about 60-something, just over 60,000 words, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so I just held into it, and that month I happened to visit Nigeria. I went to see my parents, and I met up with an old friend from university. And she was telling me about a friend of ours, a classmate of ours, who had published a book in the U.S., and she was based in Nigeria. So when I came back to Canada, I did a search on Google for her book, and I came across an interview that she had done and how she talked about how she got an agent while she was going to live in Nigeria. And she said, you know, she said something about, I think, probably not phrasing it correctly, but something about you don't have to swim across the Atlantic to publish a book. And so I said, well, the good thing about it was I'm already across the Atlantic. So that was a plus for me. And so I decided, well, I was going to learn how to write a query letter. So I went online. I found different websites. I learned how to write a query letter. And then I went searching on different websites for different names of agents who were accepting clients, who were open to clients, who were publishing, like, multicultural books and women's fiction and different kind of books. And so I sent out a query letter to 16 agents that week. I introduced myself, asking if you want to see my book. That same week, I got an email back from my current agent. His submission requirements were the first 10 pages of your manuscript. So he had read the first 10 pages. He asked me for the full manuscript. And that was a Thursday. By Monday, I had an agent. So it happened very quickly. So he's a very generous individual. He walked with me for 8 months on the manuscript. Finally, by April of 2011, the manuscript, you know, we're ready to start sending it out. And as the way things worked, a week later, I had a publishing deal from Penguin Canada.
Wow.
So everything happened really, like I said, quickly. On the flip side, I've been working on my second novel since 2010, and I'm still working on it. So,
okay.
And I think in a way it was, I would say my second, because I did publish a novella last week, but my second novel. And in a way it's been, I think, a humbling experience for me to actually sit back and, the first time happened so quickly. I guess I was blessed, but it made me really sit down this time to think about my story, think about my characters, and really appreciate the journey of other people around me. There are people who, when I talk with people, say, "Oh well, I've been trying to get an agent for years. I've been trying to publish for years," and just to really understand what it must feel like for them. And so this second part, you know, with this second book, it's really been a journey for me. And in a while, it's not been the most pleasant of journeys, but it's been, I think, I've grown from it. And so I'm thankful for it as well.
Okay. So at what point did this become real to you? You know, and it clicks that this long-awaited dream of yours is now reality. You did it. What did that feel like?
I think I remember when I actually saw the book. That's when I saw it, when I actually held it. It was just very surreal for me. And I was like, this is my name on the cover. I'll get emails from people from different places and say, oh, you know, this book meant this to me. And that was just it's very hard to put into words something that I sat down and I wrote is able to influence other people in this way. And I'm so grateful. So grateful for, you know, everyone who's supported me, who's bought a book, who's told other people about it. Because it's one thing, I don't think you can do it all on your own. You need a village of people.
Right.
And I'm very blessed with people who, you know, gone out of their way to bless me in so many ways. So I'm definitely grateful.
Okay. Now, how many, I know this is your first full-length novel and you're working on another one, but how many other books have you written?
So, just one more to two. I wrote a novella that was published last week. It was in collaboration with World Reader. World Reader is an organization based in California. And what they do is they provide free e-books to children in Africa and Asia. So they also provide free e-readers as well. So I did a collaboration for them because when they work with authors, the funds, proceeds from the sales, a portion goes back to both readers.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
So then that way they're able to continue to do
novella?
The things that they do. The name of my novella is called Chasing Butterflies.
Okay. Yeah, I saw the cover. It's fantastic. I love butterflies, and whoever worked on that did just a beautiful job on that cover. So it's currently out.
Nigerian
is it? Okay. It's available in ebook. Is it also available in hard copy?
Not yet. Because World Reader provides mainly ebook to their readers. That's why it's only out on ebook.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's also a slim novella, it's just about 25,000 words. In terms of cost of having it in print, at this time it's not very cost efficient.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So what would you say is the hardest part of being a published author?
I think it's expectation. Because I was thinking before I published and I wrote, and nobody really knew what I was writing. I was writing just for myself, and so it didn't matter, you know, what happened with it. But after you write a first book, and people just say, "Oh, so when is your next one coming out?" You think, "Okay, after I've written this first book that was very successful, can I do it again?" I think that's been the hardest thing for me in terms of, okay, what if the second one is not as successful? Does that make me less of a success as a writer? How do I define success for myself? Am I going to define by the number of books that I write? Or am I going to define this for, you know, the joy that it brings into my life? So I think these are the things that I've had to struggle with ever since Daughters came out. And I think that's been the hardest part of it for me.
Now, I call that performance anxiety. So, you know, now that you are, you're kind of in the midst of, you know, working on this next novel, how do you get over it? You know, because some people get stuck there, you know, they have this amazing first book and they never get out of performance anxiety in order to be able to produce, you know, future works. And so, but you're still plugging along at your book, so you have found a way of being able to get out of it. How do you encourage yourself out of the trap of performance anxiety and the need to measure up to previous works?
I think I was talking for a while, and so at one point I didn't write. I just read other people's stuff, and I tried to find other things that, you know, made me happy. And I think it was getting to the point of realizing, okay, who exactly is, you know, what's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of my life? And realizing, okay, finding exactly what the purpose is for myself, that regardless of, you know, what other people see see my writing for, or what does it mean to me? And I realized that regardless of whether I publish again, I love to write. I love to write. It makes my life beautiful. And so I focused on that.
Answer.
So I said, okay, So that's what encourages me, that even if I end up sharing it with only one person, I love to write and it makes me happy. So.
That's such a great answer, and that's so freeing too. You know, if you had a chance, is there anything that you'd change about the literary field?
Is there anything I change about? I'm sorry.
The literary.
I'm
field.
Sorry.
You know,
I didn't
you've
get
been it. In here, so you've.
I'm sorry. I didn't get that.
You
I'm
there?
Sorry.
I'm here. Is there anything that you would change about the literary arena? You know, if you could. You know, now that you've been, you know, involved for a few years, you know, you see different things. You know, is there anything that stands out to you that if you could change it, you would? You know, just anything about the industry as a whole.
I definitely would hope that, you know, like for traditional publishers, that they would pay writers more. if I could change that, that's something that would be lovely. I understand that there's an overhead, it's a business, and I know that a lot of people have to be paid, and publicists and editors and all that. But it would be lovely if authors also, you know, were paid more. And really, if you look at if you actually calculate how much you get paid per hour based on the number of hours you put into writing the book, it's less than minimum wage.
Yeah. Right.
And so
if
it's something I could change, I would say that would be helpful, because while I know a lot of writers do this because of their passion, it would also be nice to be able to pay your bills.
That's right.
to be able to, you know, because you have to pay your bills so that you're able to buy more time to write. Like many authors, I work full-time. I have a family. So the little time, you don't have a lot of time, so you have to be very creative about how you write. But I think there will be people who would flourish and do more if they have that financial, you know, like support to be able to do the things that they love. So.
Okay. Now, how do you deal with less than favorable reviews?
I remember when I first. Oh yeah.
Okay.
Of course, it's you get it's funny how you fixate on the ones that are negative when you kind of forget all the positive ones.
That's so true.
So I had to tell myself everything, it's a balance. And writing is very subjective in terms of how people interpret it. So you can't expect anyone who reads your book to interpret it the way that somebody else would. You've done what
you can, and
you release the book into the world. And how it's received, really, you don't get to control that. And so that was a lesson for me to walk through. And also to look at the response I'm getting back and saying, okay, look at it with an objective eye. Is there something in this feedback that I can use to improve myself?
Yes.
And so
I'm
not one of those writers who, excuse me?
No, go ahead.
I was just saying that I'm not one of those writers who don't read your reviews. I do. Like, I read them. And I try to find something. What is it in this review that I can use to improve my next work? That can help me in a way to process something in a different way. So that's how I look at reviews.
That's right. Okay. You know, it seems like in recent years, you know, there has been kind of an onslaught of some of the newer or younger writers, you know, kind of arguing with reviewers, and it's like, you know, it leaves a kind of a nasty taste in people's mouths. It's like, well, you know, not everyone's going to agree, you know, so just kind of develop some thick skin, learn from it, and keep it moving. So I love your, you know, just your thoughts about that. Like, you know, what can I get from this that will make me a better writer? How can I use this to improve, you know, the next story without taking it personal, even though, you know, we know that when you're putting forth your creative energy, you know, into a project, you know, it's like there's a piece of you that's in there, and it feels personal, and yet it's not personal at the same time. You know, so that's such a great, just look that you have, you know, about reviews. Like, you know, how can I improve myself, you know? And so I just love that. I just want to expand upon that a little bit. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who are you on the other side of the pen?
Okay, my name is Yechike Chilanko. I was born in Nigeria, which is in West Africa. I'm the first of five children. My dad was a university professor, which meant that we had lots of books at home, and so I've always, I'm a huge reader. Reading has always been my escape. I moved to the United States in 2000. My husband and I met while we were in university. And he came to the United States, and I joined him in 2000. We lived in Maryland and Pennsylvania. And after that, we moved to Canada, which is where I now live. I have two children under the ages of 13. I work full-time as a mental health therapist to children from the ages of 6 to 18. So I love to dance. Music is a huge part of my writing routine. I listen to music while I'm writing, and if I to write a sad scene, I actually look for a music, so like a song that will make me cry, because I need to feel the emotion while I'm writing that scene. So what else? I love humor. I appreciate like funny people. I like people who can make me laugh. So pretty much that in a nutshell is who I am.
Okay. Now, if you could leave your readers with one message in your work, you know, what is the biggest or most important thing that you'd want them to take away after reading your stories?
I think what I'm hoping is that my work would initiate conversation. That regardless of whatever the topic is, that if it's an internal dialogue with yourself, or even with other people, because I write about really heavy, heavy subjects. But I also want to leave that, you know, there's hope. There is hope.
Yeah.
That, you know, things might be dark today, but that it's not the end. And that there's hope for a new kind of life, a new way of being. And so that's what I hope, that they leave encouraged, and that, you know, that they're able to just get to that point where they can be able to change things for themselves.
Okay. Now, what advice would you give to an aspiring author?
Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself, because at the end of the day, regardless of whether you're successful or not, you want to, when it's all, everybody's gone away in the middle of the night while you're writing, while it's quiet, it's just you. And you have to believe in what you're doing. You have to believe that, you know, like, it's not about writing to a particular, you know, because right now, depending on what the new craze is and what people really like. Maybe this time everybody wants to read about vampires, or for example. Not trying to write a story that you think everybody wants to write. Write your own story. Write
That's
it
right.
with your own truth. And I believe that that
oh,
will...
Oh, disagreeing with you, will, yes.
Yeah, it will take you far. It will take you to that long after everything is gone, that you can stand by that work and say, this is my truth, and this is, you know, and stand by your work. So doubts are going to come, definitely. There's nothing you're going to do in life where doubts won't come. Surround
That's
yourself
right.
with people who can support, you know, hold you up on those days that you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. You know, build your craft. There is a craft in art to write. I've never been to a writing class. I've never taken I know that there is an art which I think you're born, the gift you're born with, but there's a craft too which you can learn. So be open to learning from others who've done it before you. So that's my advice. Read as much as you can.
That's excellent advice. I just want to talk about the bridge between your writing and your being a mental health therapist. You know, when you are dealing with your clients, do you find that being an author and making this particular portion of your dream come true, you know, does that spill over, you know, into the, you know, the therapy or the services that you're able to provide for the young people? Do they know that you are an author?
I don't normally talk about it. Some people do, but I try not to talk about it because, of course, there's this thing about confidentiality as well. Because I don't want my clients to think, oh, she's listening to my story, so she can go write it about it.
So I'm very
careful about that. But in terms of even like therapy, in terms of narrative therapy, where you know you're getting your clients to tell their story. So you're walking through that story with them and trying to identify areas of strength for them. So definitely I encourage my clients to do a lot of journaling. So there are people doing journaling and things of that way of externalizing all, you know, the emotions they're feeling that way. So in that way, it impacts my therapy and the way my therapy impacts my writing because it makes me think more about the internal world of my characters. Like what is going on in their head? More than and how is, you know, the internal stuff, how is it affecting the behaviors that we see on the external?
That's good. That's real good. What can we expect from you next?
So I'm working on my second full novel. I'm hoping to get it done this year, and I'm hoping, you know, it gets published, and I have, I probably have about three novels, like three works in progress right now that I'm working on. I would love to write a children's book. I'm hoping, I have lots of things on the go, and I'm just hoping that, you know, I stay strong and stay healthy, and I'm able to juggle them with all the other stuff I have to do.
Okay. Do you have any book signings or engagements coming up where readers can meet you?
Not at this time because Daughter's been out since 2012, so that's almost like an old book in some sense. And so right now I'm just focusing on writing, finishing the second book, and I'm hoping that, of course, that will mean more events coming up. But I'm always open, you know, if you have any questions, anything from me, I'm open to emails. If anybody wants me... to be part of their book club meetings. I've done some by Skype. So I'm open to talking about daughters in any way that anyone is interested in.
And that's a great segue because I was going to ask you next to tell us where your books can be found and how readers can follow you. So that's perfect. You can tell us about that.
Okay, so the books are, you can find the book on Amazon. And other on Barnes & Noble. They're in bookstores as well. Because I live in Canada, it's hard for me to specific bookstores where in the U.S., But I know I've had people send me pictures. Oh, I saw your book in a novel. I saw it in my bookstore. But definitely they are on Amazon. You can get copies on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. There's Kobo, there's Nook. Also, I'm very active on my Facebook page. I also have a website where you can send me an email. I'm on Twitter. So if you need to get hold of me, it's not difficult at all.
Okay, so are you on Facebook, on Twitter, and on your website, is it just your name? Or do they,
My website is yezidekilanko.com. And on Facebook, yezidekilanko author. On Twitter, yezidekilanko as well.
Okay, all right. Well, we've reached the end of our time here. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure talking with you and learning more about your journey and your craft. We at Say What Book Club and Author Spotlights would like to wish you continued success on your literary journey. I'm so looking forward to meeting you next spring for our event, too. Thank you again for spending some time with us this afternoon. Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Again, listeners, we have had best-selling author Yehide Kilanko with us today. If you missed any part of this interview, you can access the archive about 5 minutes after the show airs to hear it in its entirety. This is Tamika Patrice Kane from Say What Author Spotlights, signing off saying join us here every fourth Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we interview our favorite authors. Until next time, live your purpose, encourage someone to be their daily best, and read a good book. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.